Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is Dr. Lindsay Cherry. She is an associate professor of personalized care with Long-Term Conditions Research Group at the University of Southampton and consultant podiatrist at Sea City Primary Care Network, Southampton. Lindsay has worked clinically as a specialist podiatrist within the field of rheumatology for over 15 years across various health sectors and authored more than 50 academic papers, textbook chapters, and clinical guidelines. She is a past chair-elect of the European League Against Rheumatism, or EULAR, Foot and Ankle Study Advisory Group, and current co-convener for the British Society for Rheumatology Foot and Ankle Specialist Interest Group, alongside sitting on several other academic and funding committees. Lindsay is very passionate about supporting people to live well with long-term conditions through better personalized care, and is an ambassador for the UK Personalized Care Institute. Dr. Lindsay Cherry, welcome to SpondyCast.
Hi, well, thank you for having me. Thank you for the invitation.
So today we're gonna talk about feet. When I was growing up, my mom always would go, and I never knew what a podiatrist was, but I knew what the foot doctor was. Okay. So tell us a bit about your work in spondyloarthritis and rheumatism. What are like foot symptoms that show up for people that can impact daily life?
Yeah, sure. I guess for people living with AS, there's a couple of symptoms that really commonly show up and that we see a lot in clinic. And they're also, I guess, appropriately so, are reflected in a lot of the research interests as well. And that pain is a common feature. And pain, often when people are weight bearing, so when you're standing up and trying to move around, is something that frequently comes up. When we think about the foot, we often, we sort of separate it into three parts. We describe the rear foot, so that's the ankle and your heel, the midfoot, the bit in the middle, and the forefoot, so your toes and the bit at the front. And what we know with AS is that people predominantly sort of experience pain in the rear foot quite often, and it might be under the heel, at the back of the heel, but that's not to say that it's not in other areas as well. And there's lots of different causes for that, but certainly that region of the foot and pain and mobility is the thing that comes up more often than anything else.
So is that heel pain, is it associated with like lower back issues?
Well, it's a bit chicken and egg. The short answer is yes. We think that it probably is. But which one causes which is really, really unclear. But what we know is that if you have pain, experience pain sort of anywhere, our natural response to pain is to lean forwards. And that shifts our center of gravity. It puts more strain on the lower back. It changes how our hips work when we're moving, and that changes how our knees work, and that changes how our feet and ankles have to work. And that puts a lot of strain on the joints and then the tendons, which are the bits that attach the muscles to the joints, and the ligaments, which are all those soft tissues that try and hold the joints together. They all take a bit of extra strain. So then you get more pain in different areas. So you move differently, that causes more pain and strain, and it becomes a little bit of a problematic cycle.
I have experienced it. If you can see my face, if you're listening, it was like an epiphany as that leaning forward. And I think we'll come back to that. I think in spondyloarthritis though, that is like we typically lean forward.
Yes.
A little bit. And it is a cycle.
It is. And it's really difficult. And I think one of the particular challenges that's it's not unique to AS because we see it in other areas. That pain response is true for lots of people. But in particular with AS, we know that you also get some of these sort of postural changes that happen, in particular rounding of the shoulders, tension through the top of the neck, changes in the top of the spine, as well as changes in the bottom of the spine. And we think that amplifies or exaggerates this sort of pain mechanics type cycle that we see here.
That's fascinating. Okay.
Okay.
I feel like you're inside my body right now. So when, as part of treatment, like how important is it to go see a podiatrist or think about foot involvement with AS?
I mean, I'm going to be biased, of course, but I'm going to say very. It's really important. And I think it's the reason that I say very is because we know that for general health, keeping your mobility, remaining physically active is critically, critically important. And keeping your foot health and your lower limb health as good as it can be so that you preserve your mobility, that you can stay active, will have a massive knock-on consequence to lots of other areas of your life as well as your general health. So that's why I say very. But I also know that when we catch things early, or even better, prevent things from happening, it's so much easier to get a good therapeutic outcome than if we catch them later and then we try and fix problems that have been established or grumbling along for a while.
Yeah. So like, is that one of the biggest challenges you would face?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. And I think that, I would sort of say this is true for people that I come across in the world of rheumatology. People are really stoical. They really want to, you know, sort of be strong and carry on. And, you know, I'm not going to let this pain stop me. But sometimes I wonder if that causes a bit of delay in people just putting their hand up and saying, I'm not sure about this and I could do a bit of help here. And I really, really always want to encourage people to come as early as possible. I'd much rather say, oh, do you know what, you're okay, than, oh, we've caught this late.
It's interesting that you've caught that, this like warrior, it appears to be universal, like with people in, I don't have like, not particularly in rheumatoid arthritis, but I know quite a few. I guess it does, it spans rheumatoid and I've heard it. There must be something about our genetic makeup that makes us like,
there's something driven. Super awesome about folks living with
it's really strange.
It's amazing, but I always want to encourage people to just check in. Part of taking ownership and living well is saying, am I okay? Is everything as good as it could be? How could it be better?
And frankly, I'll be honest, when I saw you pop on the Spondycast schedule, I was like, huh, I never thought about a podiatrist for whatever I've got going on. Okay, so treatment. So what are the types of treatments you would offer to patients?
Gosh. There's loads. And I think the things that people most frequently experience from a podiatrist will be things to do with their musculoskeletal health. And that can be things like insoles. That's pretty common. We could do a whole podcast on that, I'm sure. But there's also, we do quite specific assessments, so we really look at how people are moving, really design insoles to support the structures of the foot, to help support the way that people move, And then we look at footwear as well. That often comes with a rehab type package. So there's stretching and strengthening exercises in there. Perhaps there's splinting or different kind of aids and supports that go on in there. One of the big challenges that we have is always, is this a local foot issue? Is it mechanical? Is there inflammation? And managing that inflammation is a challenge. So there's a whole other load of stuff that your podiatrist might do to help manage inflammation in the foot. But then we're always wanting to know, or is this actually a bit of a flare? Is there something systemic or in your whole body that's right. going on? And so the podiatrist will, depending on their level of training, might also look at, you know, medicines optimization. Perhaps we look at some targeted steroid injections, things like that. But as well as that, we're also always looking at things like the blood supply down to the legs, the nerve function in the legs, the tissue health, your skin health. All of those things get included in that package of assessment and care as well. So there's a lot that could yeah. still go on.
Yeah. So let's touch on inflammation or like enthesitis in the yeah. foot. Talk to me a little bit about how it shows up in the foot. And it's fairly, like this term comes up over and over.
What is it? What is enthesitis? Right. We get that question in clinic. Oh, I've heard people mention this. What is it? Enthesitis is a term that just describes when you get inflammation in a particular part of the body. And that particular part of the body is where your tendons, so that's the bit of tissue that connects your muscle to a bone, attached into the bone, or where ligaments are those soft tissues, sort of like not very stretchy elastic bands that wrap around our joints. Where those tendons or ligaments attach into the bone, if you get inflammation at that site, we call it enthesitis. So that's what it is.
And in feet, is it particularly more significant than yeah. in other areas?
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's sort of a classic feature of AS that we see in the lower limb, and in particular in the foot and ankle. We really often see this at the back of the heel. That's a really common site. Why that's the case, again, we've got a lot of theories. The evidence isn't brilliant, I would say, but the theories are that, you know, it's our calf muscle, gastrocnemius muscle, is a really big, powerful muscle, and it's a really thick Achilles tendon that comes down and attaches into the back of the heel. And then we put a load of force through that every time we take a step. So if we're walking reasonably briskly, you might be putting 3.5 times your body weight through that tendon, specifically at that single attachment site at the back of the heel. If you're running, that increases to around 7 times your body weight going through that single point. Wow. And then you times that by the number of steps that you might take in a day. And we know that an average sort of amount of steps that somebody takes is around 10,000 steps a day. So that's a lot of times for a lot of force to be going through that one single point on your body. Yeah.
I'm like thinking of that from like an engineering perspective.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
What we can handle.
And the human body is amazing, right? How amazing yeah. that we're designed, that we can take this, that happens. All of the time, and then every day, you know, times 365 days a year, times however many years we're alive. So it's really, really amazing feat of engineering. But then when we start to get a little bit of a problem, when we get inflammation, the elasticity of that bit of tendon or that bit of tissue sort of changes a little bit. It's a bit less elastic sometimes, so it stiffens yeah. up a little bit. But we're still putting the same strain through that tissue. So then we start to get a bit of injury because it's not stretching and recoiling, so giving and giving. like we perhaps would want it to be. And so the injuries creep in there, and with a bit of injury we get a bit more inflammation because our amazing body is trying to heal it. And that's what inflammation is. We're just trying to heal these structures. Yeah. And so this is the key, right? We need inflammation. It's not always bad. We need healing.
Right.
But we don't want too much of it. And this is the challenge. And this is where, as podiatrists, we really try and work with people to tailor that rehab, where we go, what can we be sensibly doing that gets some elasticity back in the tissues, that manages what you're doing day to day, that gets really good recovery, that's not too much, but is just enough, and that changes all the time.
Right. So, yeah. Okay, how do you hack that?
How do you hack that? Really good question. And I guess that's where some of the research, the really cool, exciting research is going. How do we really personalize medicine? How do we know in that moment what that person needs, what's going to be right for them? So there's new imaging techniques that are coming into clinic, not just to see the structures, but for example, to see how elastic that tissue is, how inflamed that tissue is. And then we can use that to personalize that treatment plan and kind of get it right. There's other research that's also using our like wearable devices. Like we're all walking around with Fitbits or a smartphone in our pocket that tracks our activity. And some of the cool research is bringing that in as well and going, how do we learn from what we're doing to again go, okay, so I've had a really bad flare, but actually I can see that, you know, on that particular day I did a massive load of shopping and I had a school run and I had this, that and the other. No, I'm not surprised actually that it's a bit sore 2 days later, because there's a time lag sometimes.
Right. I say the time lag's about 30 hours.
Yeah.
That's my, yeah. Like for me, when I do overdo it, it's about 30 hours.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'm feeling Tuesday night's workout right now.
And there's other stuff, you know, there's this stuff that people can do for themselves. Like, if it's really tight, stretch it out. Like that's the simplest thing. Because footwear makes a massive difference.
Yeah,
you get some shock absorption and some cushioning in the shoe, and the tissues don't have to do that for you.
Yeah. What about heels?
Oh, heels are a really tricky one, because when you wear a heel, you lift your heel, the person's foot, up off the floor. And when you lift your heel up off the floor, you actually shorten the length of that Achilles tendon. So instantly, it often feels much better because it's not being pulled and it's not as tight. So sometimes we might actually put a little heel raise into someone's shoe to give a bit of relief, to take the strain off. So heels aren't always a bad thing. And people with AS say, you know, I don't want to wear flat shoes. It's just not comfortable with me. And I go, do you know what? That's absolutely fine. The caveat to this is, if you use a really high heel all day, every day, eventually that Achilles tendon, for example, will sort of shorten. That becomes your new normal. And then it's even harder to get the foot flat back on the floor. So you have to... like all things in life, it's a bit of moderation.
Okay.
But I don't think heels are all bad. And most I can imagine podiatrists around the world sort of screaming at me, but we know that they can be therapeutically beneficial.
I'm personally in agreement with you. And I think they just make you feel good. And some of that also makes you feel better.
Yeah.
So as I sit here in my tennis shoes. Talk a little bit, can you double click on the imaging for elasticity? That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? And it's an extension of some of the work that's been happening in ultrasound So ultrasound, a bit like when you look at babies, if anyone's ever had a baby, similar type of thing. So it uses sound waves. So it's nice. There's no radiation. So it's quite a nice imaging. And we see that increasingly in the UK anyway, in clinics. It's an in-the-clinic device. You'd have to go off to a department. And part of that evolution of ultrasound is now this ability for that technology to look at the elasticity of the tissues. That bit we're not quite seeing in clinic because okay. We don't know yet what's normal, what's abnormal, what's a healthy range, what's an unhealthy range. Like we need more data. We need to apply that in different patient groups to learn more. But it's definitely a really exciting area.
I think ultrasound for enthesitis started in the UK and it's been popular for much longer than it's made it into the US.
Okay.
And I also think it's cost effective comparative to.
Yeah. And I think for us, that constant challenge of, so when I'm in rheumatology clinic and we're working together, the rheumatologists might look at bloods. They might do some kind of global assessments of disease activity. And I say, actually, it looks really quiet. There's no signs of inflammation. But I might be looking at the foot going, are you nuts? There's loads of inflammation. And the conversation sort of goes, is it inflammation or is this just mechanical irritation? Is there something going on here? Is there enough inflammation that we need to change meds or do we need to do something local to the foot? And actually, ultrasound is just another tool in the box to help us unpick that tricky dilemma about how do we tackle this?
Yeah, are there any tells in the difference between like an irritation and a?
It's really, really difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure.
It's really, really difficult. But that's where the elasticity thing is really interesting because when somebody has raging inflammation, and I'm sure you and the listeners will know, you can tell, you can feel in your body.
Right.
It might be really obvious. It's red hot and swollen, or it's changed color in some way. But sometimes you can feel it, but you look at it and it doesn't look how you expect it to look. And actually, I think what we're seeing then is sometimes it's just starting to increase, or it's settling down, but it hasn't completely settled. It's not right in that window of flaring inflammation. But that's when it can be really painful. And that's when there still can be damage. And that's when the stretch, if you like, in the tissues is different. And that's when it could be a really important window for us to be doing something therapeutically. Yeah. And so we don't want to miss that. But it's really hard to just spot. And I would say often that the patients that I work with know before anybody else does. They're really good at telling us.
I think so. And I think this is some of the, right? So there's also this, we can go down this road, but we don't have to for Pete today. But I think this is where listening to the patient comes in. Yeah. And it's probably, in my personal opinion, one of the keys to diagnosis earlier.
Absolutely.
So,
and I think I obviously have to declare a bias. Like I'm associate professor in personalized care. That's all about communication, shared decision making, working with people. So I have a massive bias, but I guess that's the other really interesting area of research that is emerging, that there is data now showing that when we work collaboratively, when we share decision making, when we personalize care, health outcomes are consistently better.
And
that's fascinating because it sort of suggests that it doesn't. When is it actually that it's the right medicine, if that's medicine is the right word, and when is it more about it's the right thing for that person in that moment? And getting it right for the person in the moment seems to outperform getting the medicine right, if that makes any sort of sense.
That makes a lot.
Which is really interesting.
It is very interesting. And it's, someone just sent me the trailer for the documentary Heal.
Oh, okay.
I have not totally seen it, but it resonates with me. I have it on my list for this weekend. But it's talking about how the body is capable of healing itself. And some of it is, you know, meditation. Some of it is medication. Some of it is mind over matter. Some of it is how we, what we eat. And I think it's very interesting, this idea, especially in the autoimmune world of personalized care. Because
it's really interesting, isn't it? And I guess in the most simple way, to bring it back around to foot health, I suppose the moment that I might have as a podiatrist with someone is just the tiniest moment in the grand scheme of their life. And one of the questions that I might get is, well, should I be resting this? Because we're sort of told early on, if something's not quite right, you rest up, or, you know, rest, ice, elevation, compression, these kind of things.
Yep.
But then we have this completely conflicting advice that says it's really important to keep moving. You've got to keep moving. So how do you know if I should rest it or I should move it? And I can't ever tell you that. But what we can do is try and work out, how do you know that for yourself, so that in the moment you constantly can evaluate and work it out. And I always think that's a really nice example of, it's completely redundant me giving you an in the now answer. It's far better that we try to equip somebody with some tools to work it out for themselves.
Yeah, it's this idea of, we're going through this in my house with physical therapy after somebody had surgery, and 4 days post-op on like a pretty massive surgery, they're like, okay, you're in physical therapy now. And I can remember growing up, if you got a surgery, you didn't move for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's very different. And one sort of hard and fast rule that maybe you can comment on when it comes to that movement is, when it's painful, you shouldn't do it.
Mm.
And I think that's a great rule.
It's really interesting, because just thinking about foot health,
yeah,
we really challenge that. And I think it's sort of that there's really good evidence around lower back pain with this as well.
Okay.
Because we innately sort of kind of think, well, pain is there to protect us. It's our body's way of saying something's not right, and so we don't want to move that. We protect whatever it is that's in pain. But we know, generally speaking, for folks with AS and foot pain, you move it more, it reduces the pain.
Right.
You move less, it intensifies and lasts longer. I mean, that's a really broad summary, but in general, we have to learn to move with the pain in a way that we can cope with. I'm not going to be like getting people to move.
That makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
And there are days, and I'm sure many people feel it, when you take the first steps out of bed, the first couple of steps really hurt.
Yes. And so you don't want, and this is that stoical thing again, right? Listen to your body. When we first get up in the morning, that early morning heel pain is because there's stiffening of those tissues overnight. There's this big fat sort of elastic band underneath your foot called the plantar fascia, and that gets tight overnight. So when you first put your foot to the floor, it needs some time to relax and stretch out. So listening to the pain is good. Take your time, ease onto the floor, stretch it out before you get going. Don't just think, no, I'm gonna get through this and power on through the pain. Because what happens is, if you do that, you pull on that structure and you get micro trauma. It pulls apart. Micro trauma triggers inflammation. Inflammation increases your pain, and the cycle continues.
Okay, can we talk about plantar fasciitis for a second?
Yes.
There was a moment where I had an epiphany with it, right?
Okay.
And I'm sure I Googled it and was reading something. Because I went at one point to where I got like the boot at night to like the Velcro, the boot together. But it was very interesting because I had never thought about it. And I know it's a very difficult thing to solve, right? For a lot of people.
Yeah.
And what made sense to me was the description that you gave, which is you've got this like long strap underneath your foot in your body. And when you sleep, it shortens. And every time you, it's like a piece of taffy. And every time you step down, you re-injure it.
Yeah. Every time you step down, it's just stretching it out a little bit. And then when you lift your foot, it recoils and it pings back up a little bit. And it helps create, you know, it's functional. It's really important. But when it's really stiff in the morning, you don't want to just flatten that thing right out. You want to gently give it a chance to stretch. I sometimes describe it, I don't know if this is helpful or not. Imagine it as like a ponytail. Do you know what I mean by that? Like a bunch of hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of looks like that. So we think of it as this one thing, but it's not. It's lots of strands of tissue. And what happens when you pull on it and it's tight is you get fraying. So little bits of hair break and snap. So the whole thing doesn't break. It's still there. But each little bit of hair sort of snaps and it frays around the edge. And then that's what the body's trying to heal with inflammation. It's trying to calm it back down again. But if we just took our time to stretch it out, you wouldn't snap those little bits of hair. You don't get the inflammation. And then it's not as stiff later in the day. Because otherwise you're walking around all day on something that's been injured, that's going to get more and more inflamed. So by the end of the day, of course it's sore, it's tight, it's inflamed. And when you go to bed, it's almost like your body goes, oh, thank God, right, let's get some repair down. But that first bit of repair is a bit like the scaffolding going up. It's not really sophisticated. It's just the bare bones. It needs time for it to finesse and for it to be repaired with elasticity. So by the morning, you've got this injured structure with a load of scaffolding all around it. So it's more stiff, and that's why it feels worse in the morning. But then if you get up and you repeat the cycle, you've blown apart the scaffolding and you've got the repair. So the next night, the body's like, right, I'm going to really nail this scaffolding now. Let's make it really, really stiff. And you get into a bit of a perpetual cycle.
Yeah. It's a tough one.
It is. But on a positive note, that early morning stretching is probably one of the most important therapeutic things that you could do to get out of the plantar fasciitis cycle. And the other thing that we know can be really helpful is cold can rolling. Have you come across that?
No.
I promise you I'm not nuts. Get something like a can of Coke. So it's nice and cold of an evening. You just gently roll your foot over that can of Coke. It's just the right shape to help stretch that band of tissue. Sure. The coldness calms it all down. And you're just stretching it out in the evening. After that day of building up inflammation and stiffness, you want it to calm down before you go to bed and that process of repair happens. It calms it down. You get a little bit of organized repair. And those two things, top and tail of the day, make a difference.
That is that's a great hack. I love that. I've used a lacrosse ball, but it's not cold. And I like that. Okay, so before we run out of time, let's shift over to, because your toenails and your skin on your feet is also very important.
Yeah.
Are there symptoms or are people affected in those areas when it comes to spondyloarthritis?
Yeah, really good question. From an evidence perspective, we don't really know. There's not a load of evidence about how skin and nails are affected for people with arthritis in generally. We do see some in people living with psoriatic arthritis. That's where the majority of the work is. And we can sort of borrow that and apply what we've learned from there to other areas. Inflammation affects skin and nail health. And we know that inflammation, where you get attachment sites, particularly in the top of the toes, for example, if they get really sore, if you get inflammation around there, it's likely to affect how the nails then grow, how they grow out, how they develop. The things that folks can do, it's sort of about just regular good foot hygiene, regular good attention to your nails. We always say don't go cutting them too short, don't chase the sides. We think that there might be an increased likelihood of people getting what we call ingrowing toenails, where the sides grow into the skin. Quite why that happens, again, we're not sure. We don't know. There's not a lot of evidence. But, you know, not cutting the nails too short, just keeping them nice and trim can prevent that. Keeping on top of inflammation is helpful. Attention to footwear is helpful. So nothing that's too tight and kind of forcing everything to be squashed together can make a difference. But, of course, visiting your podiatrist can help. They can give you more personalized advice and guidance on skin and nail care. We know that callus is a problem. Callus is that hard skin buildup.
Yep.
And we know that people get that on the heels or on the front, underneath the ball of the foot. Some of that is not always a bad thing, right? Callus is just dead skin cells that should have shed off the body being squashed back onto the foot. It sounds pretty gross, but it is what it is. Sometimes that can be a bit protective. If it wasn't there, that skin would be rubbing raw. So sometimes it's okay. But if it builds up to the point where it becomes painful, and then it means the skin, it's all about elasticity, can't give, can't move, then it becomes what we call pathological. It's problematic. And that's when a podiatrist will remove it.
That's interesting. I've never thought of callus as positive thing, but I suppose if you need it for protection, right?
Yeah. And that's it. So not all callus needs to be. There was a really interesting study done by a lady called Heidi Siddle in the UK. She's based north of me up in Leeds. And they did a trial around removal of callus for people with rheumatoid arthritis. And they really found that there was no significant clinical benefit to the removal of this physiological callus for people with RA. But there is it's difficult to tell the difference. When is it physiological? So just, it's a buildup of skin, but it's protective, it's helpful. And it's tipped into actually something pathological. This is now harmful or causing me pain. If it's painful, it's probably pathological, and it, you could do with some advice and guidance. But if it's not causing you a lot of pain, if it's just staying okay, it could be protective.
Amazing. Okay, so I have one final question, then we're going to let you out of the hot seat.
Okay.
If you could answer one thing with research about the foot in rheumatology, what would you try to answer?
Oh, wow. That's a really big question. There's too many. There's too many. What's the one thing I would do? I want to know, how can we help people to personalize a treatment? So how do you know? We're never going to get rid of, I mean, if we could cure AS, that would be amazing. You know,
yes.
All of those things assumes, right? But assuming we can't do those things, what I want to know is, how can I help somebody so that they don't need to come to me, so they can walk around and there's just, I don't know, an app on their phone or something that just says, oh, this is happening in your foot, or this is happening, or you've done this, here's the list of things that you could try or do. And people just know it's less intrusive. You don't have to make a load of adjustments, you don't have to take medicines, you don't have to come and see me. That would be cool, I think.
That would be super cool.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, like, you'd probably have to wear something. Yeah, that would be okay.
I mean, I don't know what that is, but if we're talking really big, that make me redundant, make healthcare redundant. That would be cool.
That would be amazing. I think there would be a lot of happy people with that.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, is there anything else we didn't cover, I guess, first? Because we don't need to be that big of a rush.
I don't think so. I mean, I'm sure we
No, this has been great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I'm hoping you can come back and maybe we can talk more about insoles. And I'm in a noodle on the tech that would let us.
Yes. You
know, yeah. I'm sure that would be a really fun piece of research.
Yeah.
So thank you for the work you do. And I guess for, you know, keeping us moving in all this and
keep trying.
Love to have you back.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. It's been really fun.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.